Greetings, beloved ones. We come together on this inauguration day because we have some relationship to the event that took place, and we have some desire to know how to stand in relation to this event, which affects each of us in different ways. Many times in life, we experience events that are profound to our own lives or to our collective life, and they stir us to have a very strong reaction. And this one does too for many people. And as you know from your own personal experience, the reactions to the newly elected president and administration are very varied. People have different feelings, very strong feelings, but different feelings. And so what I have come here to talk to you about today is how to be in a reality that is not determined by events outside of you, but that's determined by events inside of you. Because events outside, whether they are the election of a new president or anything that will follow from that, events can sweep us up into an emotional current, an energy, that seems inevitable. In other words, our reaction seems inevitable, whether it's that we feel frightened or upset or want to move somewhere else out of this country or are just feeling confused. We have a lot of strong emotions and responses to this event and to other events in our life. So I want to put before you what you know from everything that you've learned within your own spiritual practice and life. And that is that consciousness is everything. Events don't determine how we feel. Our reaction to events determines how we feel. And so on this day, those of us who want to stand for something and not just to react to an event, we come together to ask, how can I do this? How can I stand for something in the presence of what may be a difficult, frightening, or upsetting event? How can I stand for something and feel that I make a difference? There are various parts to this paradigm, let's call it, various parts. One is the understanding that there is an inner reality and that you have some choice about what it is. You are not determined by events that just happen to you, whether they're your personal events in your life or this collective event in our history as a people. We have something to say about our reactions to things. And the reason that I entitled this talk, Standing for Light and for the Principle of Love, is because it's easy to get swept away into a current of emotion where we just react against something. We just feel bad about something. We feel aggravated. We feel angry or frightened or upset. But that's not necessarily helpful. Maybe it turns into standing for something. But just standing against something and saying, I don't like, approve of, believe in, etc., what's happening, that leaves us in a morass of feeling that we have no choice, we're just waiting for the event to unfold. And I'm wanting to share with you a greater belief in consciousness. That is, that what you do inside yourself makes a difference to the collective whole of which we are each a part. Now, when I speak to you, I trust that each of you has done whatever years of work, study, life, travel, practice, so that you have certain spiritual principles that are in you. about what consciousness is and what its effect is. When we face things that are difficult, we have to grow. We have to take a step forward. And the step forward that we're asked to take is to take those spiritual principles and embody them, so that they're not just out there, we're living them day to day. And one of those principles is that every one of us is connected to everyone else. It's a principle, principle of interconnectedness, the principle of oneness, the idea that we are one body, of which we are a part, each, unified in the earth that is the larger context holding us all. We are part of the earth's body, not just her physical body, but her energy body, and larger than that too. So we take a spiritual principle like unity or oneness, and it often hangs out in our minds as a concept. We believe it, but we don't know how to put it into practice. Beloved ones, this is the time when the principle has to become a practice, and the practice is that you understand for yourself that you make a difference, that what you think makes a difference, what you feel makes a difference. It broadcasts, it radiates, it spreads along the network of the one interconnected body that we are and affects other consciousnesses. If that were the only reason to stand for something and not against something, that would be enough, because we would want to choose to stand for something that would be helpful. We would want to stand for something that would influence others to feel uplifted, to feel more light, to connect more with a greater sense of their own truth. If that were the only reason that we were to stand for something, it would be enough. But there are larger reasons than this. And again, I invite you to consult your own spiritual background, whatever it's been, and your own intuition, whatever it is, and your own soul's knowing, all of that, to know that the future of the earth is not determined by this presidency. The future of the earth is part of a divinely ordained plan, expression of perpetual unfoldment. It is not determined by this presidency or by any one person. Now here again, you have to decide whether you can take a concept that we use words for, like divine reality, or the meaning of events, or synchronicity, or divine timing. These are words we use in a spiritual language, especially when we refer to our own lives. We tend to think, and I've said this here before, we tend to think when something happens to us, what does it mean? Why is this happening? Most of us don't think that things happen randomly. We try to give meaning to things, and we look at the picture of unfoldment. We try to find some positive meaning in what befalls us, even when that is very difficult. So the same principle of divine unfoldment that we try to reach for in our own individual life, we now need to expand to hold that principle of divine unfoldment to the collective life of humanity. The collective life of humanity is unfolding. The earth as a being is unfolding. Things are not happening randomly, and the picture of reality that we see, including all the distressing aspects, is part of the unfoldment. And again, I want to suggest, if you feel doubt about this, and that's all right if you do, look at how you interpret events in your own life. Look at how you interpret sudden illness or physical disability or something that didn't work out that you thought was going to go one way and it went another way. Look at your own life and see that you try to imagine what meaning does this have, that the thing I was looking forward to didn't go this way, it went that way. We may not always come up with an answer, but we ask the question, what do things mean? And the premise of the question is the underlying picture of divine unfoldment. So here, beloved ones, is where spiritual words have to take root, like a plant. They have to take root inside your body and inside your consciousness so that they're not just hanging out in your mind. There is such a thing as divine unfoldment because that is the principle of divinity. Principle of divinity is that the oneness is in everything, is everything, is holding everything. And if that is true, then there's nothing that's not that. It may look like it's not that, but there's nothing that's not that. This is a very hard thing to embody, and that's what I'm talking to you about. Not thinking about words, but embodying a principle so you can stand for it. The idea that what you see when you feel distressed about the current social, political, economic, any kind of collective situation, what you see when you look at that and you feel distressed is part of a divine unfoldment into something else, into something better, into greater wholeness. When we think about ourselves, we pray, we hope, we think that that might be the case. We ask, why am I having this particular problem? What am I supposed to learn from it, etc. When we think about this country, we need to say the same thing. What are we meant to learn from this experience of this unexpected turn of events, which was the upset presidency for many people? What are we meant to learn from it? Not only from this, but from all the events that are happening now that are in a sequence of bringing to consciousness things that are difficult to witness. Racial violence, the excessive use of force, treatment of indigenous peoples in ways that are harsh and depriving of rights. These are all things that have been happening in this past year, and they're part of America's history. They didn't just happen. They've been happening for 2.5 centuries, these things. And I ask you to think about the principle of divine unfoldment because it's what I'm here to convey the possibility to you that there is a purpose in consciousness looking at the things that it might be distressed by or even horrified by and say, I don't want this to be happening. There is a purpose in all of that happening, and the purpose is wholeness. To bring things into consciousness that were in the background before, to make them more aware in us so change can happen. Now, standing for light means that you stand for the principle of light. The principle of light at its foundation is that life is sacred. It's a divine creation. Light is a word for the energy of creation. It has other meanings as well that we use in a more common way. But really, light is the purpose, the energizing factor of creation. So standing for light means that we stand for the principle of sacred reality being the foundation of life, by whatever name we call that sacred reality. Many of us from this tradition in the West call it God, that reality, but we can easily call it something else. God's reality, the divine oneness are the same. They are the same. And they are holding the events the divine oneness is holding the events that are unfolding this earth into greater wholeness. Standing for light is to stand for the principles of sacredness, out of which come the moral and emotional factors that we attribute mostly in a common way to human beings. Out of an understanding of life as sacred, we stand for respect. We stand for respect for all beings. We stand for peace. We stand for the understanding of equality. We stand for the idea that no matter what shape, size, color, or any other idea that differentiates one person from another, that equality is a fundamental divine birthright. So standing for light means we endeavor in all situations to uphold the sacredness of life through those derivatives, respect, honoring others, equality, oneness, peace. That's what we stand for. And so when we feel ourselves getting caught up in emotional energies that are sweeping through the rhetoric of this country, both on the level of government leaders, on the level of those who are in high office, the rhetoric, the words that are being used, and also in the news media, we hear a lot of words being used that are not high-minded, that are engendering fear. We hold something different in our hearts. We hold a way of being different. We don't subscribe to that which leads us in the direction of disrespect, of ridicule, of disparagement, of anger. Why? Because we're standing for something, not against something. And when, beloved ones, we do that, we uphold something not only for ourselves but for each other, because consciousness is unified. It may appear that it's not, because here we are in our collection of different bodies, but consciousness is unified, and so whatever you, I, we uphold inside ourselves has a rippling effect that spreads to others through the network of consciousness. And why is consciousness unified? Because we are one body. Because that's not just a metaphor. That's an energetic, emotional, spiritual, sacred underpinning of life, that we are one body. Now, you each may feel whatever you feel about what I'm saying. And there are other reasons to stand for something besides what I'm giving you, which is that we're standing for something in conjunction with a divine reality that actually exists. We're not saying what's outside is all there is. We're saying this divine reality, the divine oneness that holds all, is holding this situation too and unfolding it. But even if you have doubt about that, that would be all right. There's another way of looking at standing for something, and that is, in our hearts, we desire to be helpful to people, not to be harmful, not to contribute to things that make things worse for life or other beings. So if we have a choice between expressing anger or criticism or disrespect towards others, including those we disagree with and do not trust, including those we do not trust, disagree with, and feel are going in ways that are potentially harmful, including those, we do not become derisive, we do not become ridiculing, we do not become disrespectful. And so I advocate, you don't have to do this, but I advocate remaining in a place of honoring the democracy and the democratic traditions that are existing in this country, even if we feel something else about this particular president, that we honor the presidency by referring to President Trump as President Trump. instead of demeaning, participating in demeaning. Demeaning is easy. We feel critical, so we demean people by not giving them the honor of a title. We're demeaning. And I'm not recommending being demeaning, because when you're demeaning of others, you participate in the very thing you're objecting to. No, I am advocating and hope to encourage you to find within yourself the very strong desire to be respectful, even if that's the only thing that you can find as a foundational truth, that you want to accord respect to all. Not because they're being respectful, but because you are standing for life's sacredness, that you want to do that, whether anybody else is doing that or not. And the place of doubt that that matters, that's something you have to deal with. Because you're speaking to somebody, they speak disrespectfully, speak respectfully back. Not disrespectfully back, speak respectfully back. You may think you're having one conversation with one person, wherever that might be. You're not. Whatever one conversation you're having is affecting consciousness. That person's consciousness, whoever they're going to be speaking to next, is going to be affected by your conversation. Not only that, all the other people in the network that are energetically connected to that person you're talking to, who you don't see, you don't know, because we're all connected. This is a hard thing to do, to get past the emotional pull of where it's easiest to go when you feel something is very wrong. And you don't like it, and you don't want it to be happening. Big pull, like an undertow, in the direction of criticism, rejection, anger, belittling, disrespect. It's very easy. That's not standing for something. That's doing what everybody in the world finds easy to do. And it doesn't lead to a way forward. It leads to things being the same. Part of the unfoldment that is taking place now being this time and for all beings, focused in this country, but not only in this country, focused in the world, is the movement past emotional identification to something that we could call soul identification. This is the big transformational movement of this time. That human beings are becoming more conscious of their deeper truth. You may not say, when you look around at what's happening politically in this country, that you see that human beings are becoming more conscious of their deeper truth. You may not say that, but this is what's generally the underpinning of divine unfoldment, that there is an awakening of the soul level of our being that's influencing more people to be more conscious of their deeper truth. And at the same time that that's happening, there are forces of opposition present that would slow down or prevent that expansion of deeper truth from happening. The forces of opposition are very strong, but the movement toward wholeness is stronger. The forces of opposition can create the illusion, and do, that there's a reason to feel despairing. There's a reason to feel hopeless. There's a reason to feel that everything's just going in the wrong direction. There's a reason to weep. Now, it's a good thing for all of us to give ourselves permission to feel what we feel. I am not suggesting by any means that anybody should deny anything about any feeling. All I am saying is that the feelings need to be upgraded or moved into a place of being absorbed into a more whole place. First to feel whatever you feel, and then to choose how you want to transform that feeling, what you want to do with it. It's not about being in denial. It's about transforming your own identity so that you're moving in the direction that life is moving in, from the surface emotional movement of feelings and energies to the deeper place that we call the soul. That's your choice, to do that, to have feelings and then to transform them into something else. And when I say transform, I'm not talking about an exercise. I'm talking about consciousness. The consciousness that something that's positive is coming out of something that looks not positive. Something that's positive affirms that there is nothing stronger than divine intention. And if you want, and I'm going to shift now to the other part of the title of what I'm talking about, there's nothing stronger than the power of love. There is nothing stronger than the power of love. Not the word love. Anybody can use the word love, the power of love. Actual love that manifests as respect, caring, compassion, the absence of ridicule, the honoring of all beings, those are the derivatives of love. All the things I said before about what it means to uphold sacredness. So, there's nothing stronger than the power of love. And when you look at events that are dismaying to you, that's the place that makes a difference, that you know that. And that you know that you make a difference because you're connected to the all that's in all, that is all. This is the time that we're in, beloved ones. This is the time for spiritual principles to stop hanging out in the concept level, but to be incorporated with fervor, with passion, with enthusiasm, with whatever we can muster, because it's very important to not let ourselves get swept up into illusions that what we see is all there is. And it's very easy to do that because fear is being promulgated. Fear is coming out of many, many, many sources. Fear. Fear creating a sense of threat. Fear creating a sense of threat from groups of people threatening us, or from other nations threatening us. So we have to become closed to protect ourselves. Fear is being generated, and then the solution to fear is to close down the heart. That's why we have to stand for something, because that's not the answer. Fear is not the premise, and closing down the heart is not the answer. No, we need a different premise. And if you are a reality of one, and everybody around you is thinking everything's fine and celebrating because everything's fine, then be a reality of one. Hold what you hold, because this is the time when it's needed. One of the difficulties with what I'm saying, and I don't know if you can catch your own thoughts about this, but I can feel it when I speak, and not just here, but in general. We don't believe we're important enough. It's one of the great liabilities of thinking in terms of numbers, you're just one, you know, instead of thinking in terms of the collective body. If we thought about the collective body, if that was really real, if the idea of the unity of consciousness was really real, we would know that we are very important, that everything we do matters, everything we think matters. But we're not accustomed to that. We have that spiritual principle someplace, but we're used to thinking, what difference can I make? I'm only one person. So we need to separate ourselves from that idea and to start thinking differently, with a sense of importance and the sense of responsibility for holding our own consciousness in a way that can be of benefit for change. To not believe that change happens just by acting. And acting is fine, but it needs to come from the right motives. Change happens from the inside out. Action needs to correspond to the inner motives to act. There's nothing wrong with acting. But consciousness has to be congruent with the actions that we choose to make. And as you know, from whatever groups that you've been in, especially those of you who have been in social or politically active groups, people bring all kinds of motives and all kinds of feelings to groups. And so I'm saying, if outer activity is something you feel called to, good, but that doesn't change anything about what I'm saying. I'm saying that change comes from the inside out, and how we hold our consciousness is everything. What we bring to that outer activity is everything. It's everything. So to go back to what I was saying, our liability from the legacy of the loss of the sense of the sacred as a living reality is that we don't think we're important enough, each of us. We think I'm only one person. If we could get rid of that one idea, life would change. Just that one idea. Of course, it's a big idea to get rid of. If we live as if everything we do makes a difference, that we're part of a collective body, everything makes a difference. That would be life-changing. It is life-changing. So, I'm going to pause here, and we're going to put on the music, which I like to do because I talk, and I'm presenting ideas to you, but I want the ideas to sink into your body as well as into your mind. And I'm just going to give you a few minutes to sit with whatever's happening inside of you so we can come back and I'll talk some more before we have questions.
Namastasya.
Consider while we're listening to this music what you imagine it would be like to live as a soul upon the earth. Do you have any reference to that in your awareness, what that might be like? To live as a soul upon the earth is the direction of divine unfoldment, that it would be possible for us to engage in whatever activities of the day that we're doing, including the same activities possibly, and feel the sacredness of everything. That's essentially the picture of the earth's transformation that needs to happen and is happening through the awakening of the heart. The picture that you hold in your mind of an ideal, the ideal, what would it be like to live as a soul upon the earth? What would it be like for you personally? What would it be like in a shared life with others? Observing the sacredness of life in all that you do. That's the antidote, that perception, to everything that is not light. Everything that conveys the view that the sacred is not real, and if it is real, it's out there someplace, it's not a way of life. This is what we're faced with now. This is what we're faced with now. It's a picture of reality in which sacredness doesn't matter. The principle of respect doesn't matter. Now, that's not everybody's reality, but in large measure, that's the reality of the forces of opposition to the expansion of wholeness that is trying to take place and is taking place. It's whatever you imagine is the opposite of living a sacred life. And living a sacred life, as I said before, is upholding respect for all, not because they act a particular way, not because they think like us, not because we like what they're saying, not because we believe what they believe. None of those things matters. None. Living a sacred life is what we choose inside ourselves because we have a consciousness that reality is sacred, is divinely grounded, and that souls are an expression of the divine oneness. And so out of that, we choose to respond to people, events, words, conversations, whatever comes our way, with the desire to express ourselves in harmony with the sacred. Not in harmony with what denies the sacred, but in harmony with what respects life. So, this is something that the world is moving towards, and it's moving through a period of darkness in which motives that are antithetical to that are coming up in people. Motives that have been hanging around in human consciousness for a very long time. Because they've been hanging around in human consciousness for a very long time does not make them permanent. It does not make them an evolutionary fact. Human consciousness has changed over millennia. It hasn't remained the same. What we consider to be human today is not what was considered to be human 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago. It is not the same. And so when we speak of ourselves or others as if this is just the way people act, you know, the way people speak, disrespectfully or angrily or so on. This is just being human. No, that's our definition of what it means to be human. But the divine unfoldment and where we're trying to go as a collective body is into a new definition of what it means to be human. And as I said, if you look back in history, you'll see just on the specific level of how people related to emotional life, very different. And in some cultures today, it's still very different. So our concept of what it means to be human is changing. And we need to rise to the occasion, to let our confidence affect our consciousness, so that even if we're struggling with feelings that claim us, let's say, feelings of hopelessness or feelings of fear, which are so common today, okay, we start out with that place, and then of feeling whatever that might be, and then we look inside for our beliefs, which I call foundational beliefs, about what is real, what is really real, not what we're feeling, but what's really real. What's really real? What's really real is something that we need to reach for, that the divine is really real, that you are a soul is really real, the things that we've used as words are really real, that namaste makes a difference, that it is a way of life. It represents an understanding of sacredness brought into every interaction. So, when you start out with a feeling that's not of light, it doesn't represent sacredness, that's okay. You need to bring it along, you know, like that, like, you know, bring it along, sweep it up into something else that you're trying to nurture. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. You're bringing yourself forward in keeping with where everything is trying to go, towards wholeness. You become, in your own life, a representative of wholeness and of love. The reason I wrote in the title of this talk, The Principle of Love, is because in our human language vocabulary, we tend to refer to love as a feeling of love, the emotion of love, falling in love, being in love. And that's part of it too. But the larger expanse of love is a relationship to all of life. And so when I wrote The Principle of Love, it means, are we willing to accord respect, compassion, forgiveness, love towards all beings? Are we willing to? Not about the actions, I'm talking about souls when I say forgiveness. There are things that can be actions that we feel are harmful and that need to be contained. But I'm talking about, are we willing to love all as a creation of the divine beings? We don't have to love actions that are harmful. Beings. So the principle of love involves us in that universality. And that's a hard thing because we're not used to it. We're learning how to get used to it. It's part of the consciousness of being one body, that our love needs to be universal, not dependent on how somebody acts towards us, not dependent on what they believe. And we're somewhere, each of us, along the way. We're on a road moving in that direction. But we're not moving by ourselves. The divine unfoldment of the earth is awakening an energy of the soul within each of us so that what I'm saying to you becomes more possible. It doesn't become more possible because you will it to be. It becomes more possible because the light that's present in your soul, your soul, your soul, and your soul is expanding. And that light expanding within you makes your heart's truth more accessible. Well, I'm going to stop talking now and leave some time for questions, but I want to leave with the last thought, which I'm repeating from before, is that our liability is that we don't know how important we are. Our liability is that we each need to revise our understanding of what difference we make, because the difference that each of you makes is so much greater than what you believe. The effect that you have is so much greater than what you believe. And I say that to you, no matter what you're doing, even if you're sitting at home or standing or working at home, it's not dependent on how many people you see or speak to. It's dependent on your consciousness being connected to all. So I want to say namaste, and to have that be the last word of my talk, because it is the incorporation of the soul embodying and embracing life as sacred. We have some time now for questions, comments, or whatever you'd like. Yeah?
First off, thank you so much for everybody who organized this, for creating this really sacred space for all of us just to be together. And just take a lot of heart from everybody who came out this evening and is grappling with the things that we're all grappling with. So, for like 40 years, I've been struggling between my spiritual sense of things and my activist sense of things. And sometimes those senses are in alignment, and sometimes those senses are really at odds. So I just want to ask for your thoughts about this divine unfoldment perspective. Because in 40 years of trying to embrace things as being divinely unfolding, I still have a very difficult time with many events seeing the divine in them at all. So seeing the divine in the slaughter of Syrians, seeing the divine in the loss of habitat, seeing the divine unfoldment in the loss of species, seeing divine unfoldment in having African-American men be choked and shot on our streets. So I struggle always with those actions, and indeed with the people who commit those actions, with this idea that I should be trying to extend love when there is hate, when there is danger, when there is maybe even evil. And it's part of my heritage as a Jew also, to struggle with the things that human beings can do to one another. In this process of awakening, it seems like it's taking us a really long time, and it's atrocity after atrocity after atrocity. So when you say that we should stand for things, I agree, but I also think it's sacred sometimes to stand against things and to try to put our foot on the brake of destruction, or to summon our anger when we feel that an unbelievable injustice has occurred. And I'm really trying to integrate all of that with this idea of divine unfoldment, because I don't think we should stop our outrage. So I'm trying to find the balance between my outrage and my love.
Thank you. You speak for many people. When I spoke earlier about everything being consciousness, I hold that to be a fundamental way of looking at reality. And so, what actions people take and how we react is a matter of what we choose to hold in our consciousness. There's nothing that requires, love doesn't require approving of something that's harmful. It does not. Love creates sorrow when something that befalls someone is horrific, or loss is created, or suffering exists. What you're speaking of is the age-old question about suffering. And if God is real, then how can we bear, or how can we look at the huge amount of suffering that takes place and in various forms, some more horrifying than others? Love doesn't require you to love the actions of people. Love requires you to understand how to hold your consciousness and how to hold the soul that is the perpetrator of an action. And the way that is most useful to do that is by understanding how souls that are born in purity come to be able to be perpetrators of those actions. how souls who are born in purity can perform acts that are against life and against humanity. So it wasn't the center of what I spoke of today to talk about compassion, but the answer to your question has to do with compassion, and it also has to do with an understanding of energy. I didn't talk too much about energy either tonight. Anger creates anger. Anger can't create anything but anger because it's an energy that evokes another energy that's a counterforce. Outrage creates outrage. So on an energy level alone, the point of resisting or protesting something that you think is wrong is not being passive. It's not doing something. It's doing it from a different place than that which creates and elicits more energy that only leads to more anger. That's the problem. How can you find right action, right relationship to activity that's not generated by energies that will only increase if that's the motivational basis? What I'm talking about, standing for light, is being able to operate as a reality of one, even in a room full of angry people, but not to join them, not to join the energy which is destructive. You may wish to protest, and protest is fine against anything that you feel called to do that, but it's got to be linked to the right place in you, otherwise it just generates more difficulty. Yeah.
The lesson, if we're learning some big cosmic lesson as souls on this planet, that the cost of our lesson sometimes feels really irreparable to me, all the lies. And so there's just a kind of crushing sense of sorrow that we're not learning it well yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe not ever. And so there's a lot of that. We go around. How do we elevate out of the cycle? Because, you know, and I think we are, but I also see at the same time we keep going around. And it's just, the longer you're alive and watch it, the more heartbreaking.
Yeah. I want to go back to saying that you make more of a difference than you feel. And you are right in feeling grief. And compassion and sorrow and all of that is real. But you make more of a difference than you're aware of in terms of affecting the change that you're trying to bring about. And to the extent that you can hold with what I'm speaking of, this stage that the earth is in right now is unique. It's unique in the acceleration of energetic change that's present. And it is a principle of energy that light, when it's expanding, activates more the oppositional forces that want to contract it. So a lot of what's horrifying now in recent decades I'm talking about is because the expansion of light is accelerating. And I think that you have to look deeply inside yourself, you being anybody, to see whether you can find the place in your own soul where that feels true to you, or whether it doesn't feel true to you, or where you are with it. The expansion of light is something that is divinely ordained. It doesn't mean that you're not entirely right to feel grief and sorrow. You are. You are. We are. And the grief and sorrow are part of the expansion as well. That too. But the expansion of light accelerating is producing this upsurge of things that are oppositional, which we see on a global level in terms of the various kinds of atrocities that take place and also in this country. So please look inside yourself, because you came here to be here during this time, and your soul may know more than your conscious mind about that. And also, just to add to what you just said, there's a place of goodness in our sharing sorrow together. There's a place of goodness and a place of change when hearts open to a collective sorrow that can be shared together. And sorrow that, on that level, sorrow which wants to elevate human beings, doesn't produce more sorrow, it produces more compassion. So it's a good thing to feel and share grief in that way. Anybody else? Question?
I'm Elijah. I would like to just make a suggestion. I'm also a poet. And in one of my poems that came to me, it stated that love is really caring for someone, whether you're close by or you said you're far away. And I think with love and caring, we can have more understanding. And like, sometimes you might be in a room with a lot of negativity and you're the positive one and you try to put forward the positive, and the negative comes to you, and then you can say, well, I don't want to be part of that. So you can stay positive at the same time, because once you love, you have loved close, you know, far apart. So that's my suggestion. And thank you for the teaching to give us.
I love hearing your words. They're so soft, they're so sweet. It's the divine feminine that's got the most power, and you represent it. You just exude it. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Said this to you earlier. I'm so grateful for the teachings that have brought us to this day, that have carried me, us, to this moment, to know that we matter, to know that the divine is real, to know that we're being carried forward by a way we know not, into greater wholeness. And I'm so profoundly grateful to greet this day with hope, rather than this despair that I know has been my soul's history. So blessings and thank you.
What this has brought up in the national consciousness in regards to the feminine body and the receptivity and how that's also mirrored in the earth body. But in particular, you know, bringing it back to myself and my own process, and we were talking about the environmental devastation, and I was reflecting on these words of this teacher, Anthony DeMello, who I've been working with some deep childhood abuse issues since having my own children. And he asked this question in this book that said, where was God in the room when you were with your grandfather? Right? So, where was God in the room? Because God consciousness was there. And deep, deep work has come out of this. And deep work in terms of perpetrator and the gifts that they actually give us. If we can shift our consciousness and use those, if you want to call it evil, which is in my own bloodstream, because it was in my family, which is another gift. There's the darkness. But this idea that the evil force or the dark force actually calls the goodness to be gooder, or that if it weren't for that, there wouldn't, you know, and that is the play of this physical manifestation. And the gift that woman gave me was that, yes, I am this physical body, but trauma brings you into this place of like, oh, you're so much more. And so I think of that in terms of, you know, politics is kind of the lowest common denominator to a certain degree, because it has to speak to the masses. And so I've had this incredible compassion for this man too, because I see him as kind of a little boy who's had been able to get whatever he wants. And so So this idea of resistance, this idea of feeding with anger, was really amazing to me to see all the internal work that I had been doing, which I thought wasn't making a difference. And then having this on the macro scale be reflected as almost this, like, it was this really validating moment. So, and I hesitate to think that, like, this is any different of a time or special of a time than any other time, because as far as I understand, like, the God force is timeless, and we are here to unfold, like you're saying. But this idea that somehow we're special feeds into... I pull back at that thought, because I think that it feels imbalanced or something. But that's where the perpetrator, you know, this pussy grabbing that we've been doing to the land all along is all a part of it.
Thank you. Awakening can come from many directions, from inside and outside at the same time. The part that I've been talking about today is primarily from inside. The awakening of consciousness that's coming from the expansion of light and through the activation of another level of your own soul, which means that the sense of deeper truth becomes more accessible. That's what I was talking about today. But what you're saying is also true, that events such as events of great difficulty, pain, or trauma can catalyze a movement forward that is in relation to those events so that the good can become gooder and more of an awakening of the heart can happen. And I think both things are true. But the place where we can choose is the place of freedom. Place where we can choose what we're going to hold in our consciousness is the place of freedom. Events, we don't know what events are coming, but we need to stabilize ourselves internally in the place of knowing what we're choosing and choosing to know that love is more powerful than all else and that we're standing for the sacredness of life even in the presence of that which is rejecting that premise. Those were the things that are part of standing for light. Mm-hmm.